trending topics with legal conclusions. Brought to you by Pepper and Odom Law Firm. You're listening to Legal Roundup.
Hey everyone, this is Attorney Everett Pepper, Pepper and Odom Law Firm here in Ridgeland, Mississippi. For today's podcast, I've got a special guest here, one of my mentors, Attorney Craig Painter from Madison, Mississippi. Craig, would you like to introduce yourself to everybody?
Well, that's me. I'm Craig Painter, practicing law in Madison for quite some time now, Jackson area in general, since 1985. And name of the firm's the Painter Law Firm.
And what type of law do you usually work on? What type of cases?
Most of what I do is commercial litigation, business disputes, employment disputes, the occasional civil rights case for an injured party, Section 1983 litigation, sexual harassment, police brutality, that type of thing. And then just a general practice involving different types of contracts, leases, employment agreements, non-compete agreements, forming companies, LLCs, that type of thing.
I got you. Today's podcast, I wanted to talk about something that was in the news recently. It's a little bit outside of your expertise or your practice areas, but I think your view on it would be pretty good for all our listeners. On January the 13th, there was a news article that came out about a helicopter crash in the Gulf that happened back on December the 29th of last year. Have you heard about that?
I have.
It looks like the helicopter was leaving one of the heliports in Louisiana and was headed out to the rig to drop off a couple crew members and pick up a couple more crew members to take them back. I guess it was at the end of their shift. You know, they work several days on and then several days off and they switch. From the news article, the best I could tell, it looked like the helicopter unloaded the crew that was, you know, coming on new, and then once the crew that was getting on the helicopter to go back to land actually crashed off the side of the rig into the water, and they hadn't really determined the cause of it yet. I think it's still under investigation. And I thought that was something that would be relevant to talk about today, especially since I believe two of the crew members were from Mississippi.
Yeah, as I understand it, nobody actually watched the helicopter take off. And so what they know about it is based on hearing sounds and suddenly looking out and seeing, you know, different pieces of metal or hearing different pieces of metal hitting the platform and then the main part of the helicopter over in the water, which then sank. So they don't know yet exactly what happened.
Yeah, the witnesses, after they realized, you know, they heard the noise outside, come back outside, they deployed the emergency rescue craft, but before they could get there, you know, it had sank, which I don't know how long that would take. I'd assume it probably happened pretty quickly. It's very tragic.
Yeah, as I understand it, I did a lot of work for a while for some oil and gas companies and including some offshore matters, but that's usually how they swap out the crews by helicopter. I mean, obviously they can get them out there by boat, but it takes a whole lot longer. I guess I'd say it's not surprising that every now and then something goes wrong.
Well, we represented a client a few years ago. It was a car wreck case. The guy actually worked on one of the offshore oil rigs, but he wasn't a deckhand. He actually was, you know, one of the managers of the rig. You know, so it was pretty much a desk job. But after the car wreck, based on his injury from the car wreck, it wasn't that he couldn't do his duties on the rig, it was he couldn't pass the physical, which included a Huey test where they put him on a helicopter in a swimming pool and submerge, you know, and make sure that they can, you know, escape from it safely, or at least, you know, physically can do that. And that was from his injuries, he couldn't pass the helicopter test anymore, so he couldn't actually get to the rig to do his job. You know, it's my understanding that the helipads are, you know, up high. It looks, you know, just from the photos they posted, it looks like maybe one of the blades actually hit the rig.
Well, that's certainly possible, but again, that's supposed to be designed so that, you know, you've got plenty of clearance around the helicopter. Every helipad I've ever seen has a large amount of clearance, except those I see on the movies people have on the back of a yacht, that
right.
type of thing. But short of that, you know, when you're doing it for business and you're paying attention to safety, you're supposed to have a lot of room. Yeah, all the years I've been practicing law, I've only had one helicopter case, and that was a helicopter had gone over to, I don't remember where in Birmingham, one of the hospitals, transporting a patient from Jackson, you know, medical helicopter. And on its way back, the pilot decided to kind of have a little fun and fly along, I think it was the Black Warrior River, follow the path of the river. And what he didn't know is that there was an Alabama Power Company power line strung across the river at one point, and he flew right into it and killed everybody on board. So we ended up with a lawsuit against Alabama Power Company because they had not marked it with the big red balls you see. And of course, the people that were operating the helicopter, that was a long time ago, but it always stuck with me that how quickly something like that with a helicopter can happen, because helicopters don't glide down once the engine stops running, they just drop.
Yeah, with any type of aviation, the most dangerous time is, you know, taking off and landing. It's just for the fact of being so low, there's just no time to do anything. I'm interested on this one, if there's obviously the injuries are, you know, death cases, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was some litigation falling over this one, because the thing about these pilots is they're well trained. You know, it's not the helicopter pilots that carry the crew members back and forth. They've probably done it a bunch of times before. They know where they're going. They've landed on the rigs before, and could possibly be some type of negligence on the pilot, the operator.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got a couple of potentially responsible parties. Pilot error, certainly a very real possibility, in which case the operator of the helicopter, not just the pilot, but the company that operates the helicopters, and I'm sure there's a company that has several of them, probably even a fleet of them, they've got exposure. But then again, you could have just a malfunction in the helicopter itself that's no fault of the pilot or the owners, in which case you'd be looking at the manufacturer or maybe somebody who had done repairs on it in the past and had not done the repairs correctly, not caught what was going on. You know, you're going to have a lot of people get out there and look at that. And as I understand it, I'm not really familiar with maritime law, but I understand generally things like that happen offshore are going to be governed by a whole body of law, federal law, rather than Mississippi law.
Right. And this one, you know, which you have aviation law and then maritime law, and with the helicopters, you're under actually both. You know, so it could be a combination of them also. I had a helicopter crash case a few years back. It was also, like you said earlier, it was a medical transport helicopter, basically a flying ambulance. The lady was being transported from a smaller hospital up in North Mississippi to Jackson, and the helicopter crashed in Madison County. The pilot, that case turned out to be a defect in the helicopter in the engine, so it was ended up being a lawsuit against the manufacturer, which was in another country. It was a pretty big case. The lady was obviously already at the hospital, so she was already hurt, but the injury she sustained when the helicopter crashed was where we went with the distinguishing between the injuries. But for that one, after we got into the discovery process, we found out that, you know, the pilot basically did everything he could, and he was severely injured too. I believe he broke his back at the landing, but the fact that he could even get the helicopter down that safely was amazing. That one turned out to be, you know, a manufacturing type case. These, in any kind of planes or anything like that, there's lots of redundancies in these things.
You know, talking refreshes my memory. A long time ago, this would have been in the late 80s, I represented some defendants in a helicopter accident brought by a soldier in the U.S. Army. We ultimately prevailed defending the case, but the helicopter had gone down. He was badly injured, and it was one of those, it's like a law school exam. Every type of legal claim he asserted was governed by a different body of law under a conflicts of law analysis. And it took me as a young lawyer a couple of weeks to research that all the way out and say, this claim's governed by North Carolina law, this by Mississippi, this by Florida, this by Ohio. We finally prevailed on that. So I do remember another helicopter case now that we're talking.
Yeah, they can get very complicated very quickly on the legal aspects of it. I was reading through the article. They said that they had recovered the helicopter. They took out the engine control unit, which I assume would be, they sent it back to the laboratory to have it examined. I'm assuming that's equivalent of like a what we would call a black box.
Sounds like it.
It's also interesting, the investigator said that it could take somewhere between 12 to 14 months to actually complete the investigation to figure out what actually happened or what their, you know, official findings would be, which seems like a long time, but I guess it would depend on, you know, how complex whatever happened or that, you know, they determine, or otherwise they won't know until they get into it, you know, how long it could take.
It's interesting when somebody says, I don't know what happened, but it'll take me a year to figure it out. Well, how do you know it'll take you a year to figure out? You might figure it out tomorrow.
Right.
Or you might never figure it out.
Yeah, I may never know.
So I don't know how they could predict 12 to 14 months, but that's probably all the way through the final report process, which undoubtedly has to be reviewed.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, you saw the movie Scully.
Yeah.
When they when he put the plane down in the Hudson, and they had to go through all that process. So I can understand why it would take that long.
Another thing I thought of when I first read the article was, you know, well, what was the weather like? Was it real high crosswinds? Was it really rough seas? Just being out there, we deep sea fish out there, you know, a good bit. And these rigs are big. I mean, mm-hmm. they're a lot bigger than, you know, what they look like when they show them on TV. I mean, when you pull up in a decent size, you know, deep sea boat and look up at the rig, you know, the people look tiny. You know, when they're working up there, you can see them, you know, with their hard hats on walking around. I mean, these things are huge.
Yeah, but if the wind's heavy, then that guy shouldn't have taken out. I say guy, I don't know if there was a man piloting. I shouldn't assume that. But whoever the pilot was, you would think would not take off in a heavy wind would know better than that. So.
Well, and another thing, too, it obviously wasn't bad enough that they couldn't deploy wasn't able to deploy the rescue craft. And the article said that they tried to do that. They just couldn't get there in time. So if it was really, you know, really, really stormy or something, I don't think they could even deploy it. I think, you know, the most likely thing is either going to be operator error on the pilot's part or some type of, you know, manufacturing defect or flaw on the helicopter. And I think they said, if I'm not mistaken, it was a Bell helicopter. Yeah, a Bell 407 helicopter. It's known to be a pretty reliable helicopter. I hadn't really heard anything else after the initial article I seen is if they do decide to take legal action or, you know, for the family, you know, there'll be some investigation, some private investigation that's done also.
Well, I did see in one of the pictures too, it looked like some damage to some fencing. But again, you don't know whether that means the rotor hit the fencing or that the helicopter started to come apart and threw pieces of metal or rotor blades or whatever into it. You just don't know at this stage.
Yeah.
I do kind of think it's interesting that nobody saw it take off, just because maybe they're used to it out there, but generally if I'm standing somewhere and a helicopter's nearby, it's going to draw my attention.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be looking at it just because I'm not, you know, I don't see helicopters up close every day.
So right.
Maybe they get off, the crew coming out gets off and hurries inside and gets to work. I don't know. Still seems like somebody would have been looking at it.
I just always assumed they probably had cameras up too, you know, and maybe they do. There just wasn't any of that area. I don't know. It said, a portion of the main rotor blade was found on the deck below the helipad. You know, so if it hit something, it broke at least one of the rotors off of the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
But they said there was a lot of debris and stuff, you know, that they found on the deck. I thought another thing was interesting too. One of the pictures they showed was one of the beacon lights, and it looks like it's basically a light bulb with a metal, you know, protective case around it. It appears that something has hit it, you know, and bent the steel that protects the light bulb, which is pretty thick steel. And that's, you know, one of the lights that's on the edge of the helipad, you know, because, you know, it's obviously lit up. And another thing it showed in the pictures was it showed red paint on part of the rig. The main rotor was, you know, red. It appears the paint come off the rotor where it struck it at, too, on some of the pictures they posted. It's going to be interesting to find out as investigation goes on. I would like to track along and, you know, if they put out any news articles, or I don't know if the investigating board will actually let any other news out until they complete it. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's my general understanding of those type of investigations. They keep everything kind of confidential until they have the whole story.
Yeah, and this is also just the preliminary report. They put it out on their website, too. Anybody that wants to can go to the NTSB website and look it up, but you can also Google the helicopter crash and find out more about it.
They would let that information get back at least to the manufacturer and to the maintenance companies and the owner of the fleet to check the other helicopters. So you would think if they figured out that that's the problem as opposed to pilot error, that information will come to light more quickly.
Yeah, so they could take corrective measures and make sure it doesn't happen again, for sure. Okay, well, Craig, I appreciate you coming today and talking with us. I think this is one of the topics that are good to come up. It's a tragic topic, and it's something that you don't get to hear about a lot, and I think a lot of people, especially with this type of industry, it's something that's good to bring to light and discuss. And I know it's outside of your expertise area, but I always value your opinion very much, and I appreciate you coming here today and speaking with us.
I appreciate it, too.
All right.
Glad to do it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Legal Roundup, brought to you by Pepper and Odom Law Firm. If you live in Mississippi or Alabama and have been injured in a car wreck or some other accident due to someone else's negligence, call Pepper and Odom at 601-202-1111 or visit pepperandodom.com.